Attention listeners, AfterSight's annual hike is coming up on July 27th.
It was a really good experience for me.
Visit aftersight.org/hike and become an audio trekker today.
That hike today gave me so much courage.
Welcome. You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Boulder Daily Camera and the Longmont Times Call, read by Kevin Martindale. This is being recorded on May 1st, 2024. That's Wednesday. And today we'll be reading the following main articles from the Daily Camera. Ride the Rockies bicycle ride has some ties to Boulder County. Then the CU Music Department is jazzing up graduation. From the Times Call, we've got some stats on use of the Longmont Public Library. And we'll follow up with miscellaneous articles. All right, let's head to the front page of the Camera. And our first article is Ride the Rockies. Boulder County ties run deep to a canceled cycling event. Organizers canceled the 2024 Ride the Rockies bicycle tour in mid-April due to low registration. But some members of Boulder County cycling community with close ties to the event say it faced challenges for several years. The mountainous bicycle tour ran for nearly four decades. This year's event was scheduled for June 9th to the 15th, covering more than 400 miles of northwestern Colorado from Steamboat Springs to Fruta. At its peak, the six-day event attracted more than 2,000 cyclists annually for rides of 60 to 80 miles per day, according to the Denver Post, which started Ride the Rockies in 1986. It supported nonprofits in the more than 50 towns it visited over the years. More bicyclists want to ride on gravel these days, said Douglas Emerson, owner of University Bicycles in Boulder, a bike and gear store that outfitted many Ride the Rockies participants over the years. There's a phrase in the bike industry right now that goes, gravel is the new road. Gravel has overtaken road riding partly due to traffic, Emerson said. I also imagine that the Ride the Rockies demographic sort of grew older and there aren't as many people coming up riding road bikes. The 2024 route included a first-ever gravel option for parts of the multi-day trek, organizers said. However, much of the tour was set to take place on the road. People still want to participate, but things have changed. Interests have changed. People like riding with no concern about traffic, Emerson said. Bicycle riders willing to make the commitment to a longer ride also want to know what to expect in terms of the daily route, said Jenny Anderson, the ride manager for the annual Buffalo Bicycle Classic, a scholarship fundraising ride that supports the University of Colorado Boulder students. And Ride the Rockies was point to point, which sometimes presented logistics issues for riders, she said. What's challenging about Ride the Rockies is that it changes course every year. I mean, that's a challenge for all the permitting and everything with our ride, but we still have the same courses year to year, Anderson said. We've added gravel rides to keep up with what everybody wants. The Buffalo Bicycle Classic, this year set for September 8th, features multiple routes of varying distances, Anderson said. The 60-mile Dirty Epic route is this year's main gravel route, which snakes through Boulder Canyon to Nederland and back to the University of Colorado Boulder campus. Paul Belager was the director for the Ride the Rockies event for decades, leaving in 2007. He has thoughts about why it was canceled this year as well. Belager is now the director of Celestial Seasonings' annual Be Strong Ride in Boulder County, which benefits local cancer charities. Ride the Rockies was a really sizable cross-state event in Colorado, Belager said. It was something that was building in popularity at that time, and it was certainly the most significant mass participation cycling event in the state for decades. Belager said that to maintain interest in an annual cycling event, organizers need to engage their niche, a difficult target for a large-scale tour like the Ride the Rockies. You have to engage whatever is your niche, and for us, with Be Strong Ride, it's a specific niche. It's not so much cyclists, it's people who are passionate about healthcare, Belager said. It's a small event that's focused on the cause as opposed to Ride the Rockies, which is a larger scope event across the state. However, Belager said it was heartbreaking to see the outcome of this year's tour plans. For now, the Ride the Rockies website remains a single page dedicated to the tour's cancellation. People who signed up will receive refunds and a commemorative jersey, according to the website. We are assessing the best options for this beloved ride, organizers of Ride the Rockies said on the website. Our next article is from CU Boulder, and it says, Musicians Jazz Up Graduation Tradition. The University of Colorado Boulder is jazzing up its graduation music, a breakaway from tradition that will result in a very different sounding ceremony on May 9th. CU Boulder's College of Music created three new jazz versions of the traditional 1901 Pomp and Circumstance theme to play at graduation. The three versions are Latin jazz, New Orleans funk, and big band swing styles. John Gunther, director of the Thompson Jazz Studies program, hopes people get up, dance in the aisles, and have fun with it. I think you'll notice right away because it's such a modern take on that traditional kind of march and performance of the song, Gunther said. The Latin jazz arrangement draws from Cuban and Afro-Cuban styles like mambo and rumba. The New Orleans funk version will give audiences a street beat, marching band feel, and the big band swing style will feature varying rhythms and solo sections for players to improvise. We hope people enjoy the versions. We hope that they get a kick out of them, Gunther said. They're fun. They're upbeat. I think they're memorable. They're unique. I think they're unique to see you, and hopefully add to that, it's a special day and a unique day. Paul McKee, a professor of jazz studies, composed the songs, which were then professionally recorded in a sound studio with the help of students. Senior Grayson Stewart will walk to the music he helped create as he receives his diploma. He hopes to see some level of excitement from people when they hear the new music. It's really exciting to be part of something larger than myself, Stewart said, adding, It's really nice. We have different styles as well, So they're not just looping the same tune over and over. John Davis, Dean of College of Music, said the opportunity came from the Chancellor's office, where there was an interest to do something different with the graduation music. According to the Chancellor's office, this could be the first time that Pomp and Circumstance has been played in a non-traditional style at CU Boulder's main campus ceremony. They really wanted to diversify the types of music that were being represented at that ceremony, Davis said. Davis said these arrangements can be played at or incorporated in arrangements at graduations for many years to come. It gives the students and families something to relate to and updates the entire feeling of the ceremony. To have this variety and diverse styles, Davis said. Gunther said the music will be one of the parts of the ceremony that will make it memorable. It will provide more contemporary music that reflects the diversity and creativity of the campus. I think it shows that the leadership for CU is forward-thinking. They're looking at how they can create new traditions and update old ones and find ways to engage the students and audience, Gunther said. This all feels like a very positive gesture around what is already a very special and memorable event to celebrate the hard work of all the students. For more information on CU Boulder's graduation ceremony, visit colorado.edu/commencement. From the Front Range section, we've got Boulder Reservoir running for a cause. Participants can run, walk, or simply cheer on their friends this weekend at the Emerge 5K, an annual fundraiser benefiting the Boulder County nonprofit Rise Against Suicide. The 5K will be held from 8 to 11 a.m. Sunday at the Boulder Reservoir, 5275 Reservoir Road. There is no cost to register, and day of registration will be available in person on Sunday. Jenna Clinchard, Executive Director of Rise Against Suicide, said the 5K is not only a chance to showcase the benefits of exercise on mental health, but also an opportunity to rally people around the common goal of suicide prevention. It's just about bringing our community together and letting people know that they're not alone, Clinchard said. Rise Against Suicide works with local youth who are at risk of suicide by connecting them with licensed therapists and covering the costs of sessions. The money raised from the run will support the nonprofit as it continues to serve community members struggling with suicidal thoughts. The young person and their family will never see a bill, Clinchard explained. We just want to make it as simple as possible to access the mental health care that these young people need and deserve. Clinchard said that over the course of this fiscal year, which ends in June, nonprofit has already received 370 referrals and funded more than 5,000 therapy sessions. Our numbers continue to increase year over year, she said, so there is a need. In addition to the 5K course, those who attend Sunday's event can enjoy face painting, live music, and food trucks. Two University of Colorado Boulder football team members and one CU women's basketball player will also make an appearance at this year's run. We need to figure out a way to lighten the conversation around suicide, Clinchard said. One thing that Rise does is We add color and we add music. It's about creating a safe place to have those conversations. This year marks the 15th anniversary of Rise Against Suicide's founding. Clinchard said the anniversary comes with mixed emotions, but she has been grateful to see the nonprofit's longevity. There's a part of me that always wishes that our services weren't needed due to the nature of the young people we serve, Clinchard said. I do think it's a gift that we're still around 15 years later. Really, it is a big deal. Because not a lot of nonprofits can stay around that long. During the pandemic in 2020 and 2021, the 5K run turned into a virtual event, which posed its own challenges. Still, Clinchard said, plenty of people showed their support. We navigated what a virtual run would be like, and it was still successful, she said. It was pretty heartwarming, actually, because we had people participate from all over the world. Clinchard said there are over 350 people signed up for Sunday's run as of Tuesday. She anticipates a turnout of around 500 participants this year. To register for the 5K, visit riseagainstsuicide.org/events. Boco Pickleball donates sports gear to a local grade school. Actually, this is entitled Pickleball in PE. Lucas Mile, a physical education teacher at Boulder's Horizons K through 8 Charter School at 4545 Sioux Drive, had never played pickleball, but thought the fast-growing, accessible sport could work well in his classes. With an average of 20 students in a class, he said, it's challenging to find new sports that allow all the students to participate at once. The school gym is too small for tennis, for example, and only a few students can use the small climbing wall at a time. But four pickleball nets just fit, allowing an entire class to play. I want to get everybody moving, Miles said. It's a sport that's popular with multiple ages. I like the idea of a sport you can play with your whole family. Once he came up with pickleball as an option for a new sport, the other challenge was buying the equipment. Without money in the school budget to cover the cost, he turned to Boco Pickleball Club. The 600-member nonprofit club bought nets and collected rackets and balls to donate to the school. Members also provided a free 2-hour introduction to pickleball lesson to Mile and several other staff members. The club is grateful for the opportunity to help in establishing a pickleball program at Horizon K through 8 school and looks forward to the opportunity to support other Boulder Valley School District schools in establishing pickleball programs and seeing our community grow and thrive, Max Bailey, a Boco Pickleball board member, said in an email. After receiving all the equipment about 2 weeks ago, Miles started teaching 3rd through 8th graders the basics of the game. Starting with warm-up activities to get used to the rackets. On Tuesday, he worked with a combined 3rd and 4th grade class to learning to serve, keeping the racket below the belly, not overhand, before letting them try playing in teams. While still figuring out control, the students enthusiastically whacked the small plastic balls around the gym and back and forth over the nets. Fourth grader Asher Sessa said he shared his enthusiasm with his family and is now signed up to take a pickleball class outside of school. I love pickleball, he said. It's just fun. Classmate Ada Rahin said her tennis background isn't helping that much in getting the hang of pickleball because the two sports are pretty different. While it was kind of hard the first time she tried to play, she added, it's getting easier. I like how you work together, she said. Greta Rapp, another fourth grader, said she has found the hardest part is hitting the ball just right, in the middle of the paddle, so it goes as far as she wants it to. It's challenging, but it's really fun, she said. Miles said he's sticking to the basics of pickleball, but isn't introducing the complicated scoring system, given the limited class time he has with his students. Instead, he's planning to have students interested in keeping score count each unreturned hit, similar to scoring in ping pong. I don't know that they need to keep score for everything, he said. The kids are just making it fun. Man accused in standoff pleads not guilty. A man accused of stealing a car before running onto a boulder roof in July has pleaded not guilty and has been set for trial in September. Jason Johnson, 36, pleaded not guilty to first-degree motor vehicle theft and possession of controlled substances with the intent to distribute, according to court records. Johnson also has an ongoing burglary case in which he's charged with second-degree burglary, identity theft, two counts of first-degree trespass, and theft of $300 through $1,000. Johnson is set for a motions hearing on both cases on August 8th. And has a 3-day jury trial set for September 16th, according to court records. Johnson is currently in custody on a $35,000 bond. Johnson's co-defendant, Ashley Cotton, took a plea deal in September in which she pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit aggravated motor vehicle theft and intent to distribute a controlled substance. She received 3-year and 2-year sentences that will be served concurrently in prison. At 7:30 a.m., July 25th, Boulder police responded to a call of a stolen car. Upon their arrival, Johnson got out of the car at a gas station, fled to the roof of a Firestone Auto Center at 3395 30th Street, and told police he was armed, according to Boulder police. Boulder police evacuated the building, enacted a shelter-in-place order for the surrounding area, and closed off nearby streets. Police also called in Boulder Fire Rescue, SWAT, AMR, and the Boulder Police drone team to surveil Johnson from the roof. While negotiating with Johnson, police contacted Cotton, the driver of the vehicle, in which Johnson later said the two had been joyriding. Cotton was arrested and the vehicle was allegedly found to contain multiple bags of methamphetamine, a scale, and 12.19 grams of methamphetamine. We have a couple of small articles from the In Brief column. First one is out of Boulder County, and it says the nonprofit names Development VP. Community Foundation Boulder County named Faith Motter as Vice President of Development. Motter is a former Director of Development and Communications at Blue Sky Bridge, a nonprofit group that works on child abuse prevention and education. Motter has more than 2 decades of fundraising experience working for social issue nonprofits. In her new role, she will strengthen donor relations and develop strategies to increase support for the foundation and its partners. Sheriff's Office searches for shindig. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office wants residents to keep an eye out for a missing four-week-old horse named Shindig, who is still nursing and dependent on his mom. According to a post on X, the sorrel draft horse, Cross, went missing from his pasture in the 6800 block of Jay Road between Sunday evening and Monday morning. Deputies reported that there were no signs of predator activity or of any open gates. Anyone with information should call 303-441-4444. From the farmers market, we have Rising Tiger joins the Wednesday evening farmers market. To understand Rising Tiger's journey to the top, you have to begin with its roots. Devin Kilprafe's grandmother brought her family to the United States, including her seven children from the Camuani province of Laos, four decades ago, to escape political strife. They were sponsored by Catholic missionaries in the Eastern Shore of Maryland, where Devin grew up speaking Lao, Thai, and English, and experienced a blend of cultures that infuses his life and his cooking to this day. He describes himself then as a troubled teen who was first drawn to working in the restaurant industry for the sake of consistent free food. After graduating high school, he had a brief stint in professional boxing. He says that he still can't breathe through his left nostril after being punched in the face too many times, where he saved up enough money to start his own sushi restaurant. But it didn't last very long. After that, he worked in restaurants across Philadelphia, D.C., and Baltimore, before eventually settling Longmont in 2018. He continued to work in the industry, cooking in local restaurants, including Black Belly and Jack's, but with a young daughter at home, he decided working the dinner shift was off the table. "I realized that I didn't care about making the most elaborate dishes anymore," Devin recalled. "I wanted to be home with my baby. When I would work at the restaurants, my day would start at noon and end at midnight. I would spend 3 hours a day with my daughter, working 6 days a week and still struggling." Ready to step out on his own again, he established Tiger and Wife in 2019, a bakery business that blended his culinary roots with his now ex-partner's talent for baking, and offered no-contact delivery throughout the pandemic. They were doing well, but once they decided to part ways, he had to move in a new direction. Trying to balance his new role as a single father with reliable work proved challenging, and with mounting debt, he was ready to throw in the towel on his dreams when he decided to pursue a final Hail Mary, applying for the Longmont Farmers Market. "I figured if it didn't work out by November, I would just call it quits," he remembered. But instead of being where Devin's story ends, it's the decision that started the next. Moving away from the bakery side of Tiger and Wife, Devin reimagined the concept of his business to create Rising Tiger in 2023 with the goal of continuing to pursue the work-life balance he needed while still making the creative Asian-American fusion dishes that distinguish him as a chef. He asked the question, "How can I still make really cool food, but in a lunch and breakfast format that can complement my life?" The result comes in the form of ridiculously flavorful scallion pancakes stuffed with eggs, tofu, or pork belly, local produce from market vendors, and dripping with mouth-watering sauce. Every week, new flavors of gluten-free teriyaki are cooked fresh and served alongside seasonal dishes and drinks. An immediate hit, it's safe to say that after his first year, there was no looking back. Rising Tiger returns to the Longmont Farmers Market this season and is expanding to join the Louisville Farmers Market on Saturday mornings and the Boulder Farmers Market on Wednesday evenings. That means Chef Devin is indeed returning to dinner, but at the farmer's market, his daughter Juniper doesn't need to be left at home. "She came to the markets with me a lot," said Devin of his first season at the farmer's market. "One of the best things about the farmer's market is how family friendly it is. She can walk around and talk to the vendors, and I know she's safe." While we don't have any commentary from Juniper's perspective on how her dad's career change has impacted her, he shared that he gets to see her every morning as she steps onto the bus and returns to the same spot to greet her when she gets home from school. "She thinks my only job is walking the dog and making snacks," he said with a laugh. Boulder Farmers Market customers can expect the same Asian American fusion Rising Tiger serves up for the Longmont Farmers Market in his dinner menu, but with a new twist. Returning to his family's roots in Laos, the dinner menu will feature his take on traditional recipes, not so traditional that he thinks his parents would approve, though. "We're as American as we are Asian. We're making something that's both fundamentally Lao and fundamentally Colorado. At its heart, Rising Tiger is the story of so many first and second generation restaurants, creating the flavors that taste like home while incorporating the ingredients in their new neighborhood. You can try Rising Tiger at the Boulder Farmers Market tonight, May 1st, from 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. Our Wednesday evening market will continue every week starting now through October 2nd of 2024. Be sure to come hungry. Let's head to the Times Call, where the headline article is on the public library. And it's entitled, 936,000 Materials Checked Out in 2023. The Longmont Public Library was a popular place with all ages last year, as library card holders checked out more than 936,000 materials. The library's 2023 annual report shows that of the total, more than 235,000 of the materials were children and teen books, and more than 201,000 were adult books. The Longmont City Council discussed the 2023 annual report in a study session on Tuesday. The vast majority of materials checked out by users came from the Longmont Public Library's collection, although some were brought in from other libraries. In addition, more than 5,100 new library cards were issued by the Longmont Public Library last year. "It is really amazing what is all accomplished with little means as far as staff capacity and space and even circulation materials," Mayor Pro Tem Susie Hidalgo-Faring, who is the council liaison to the Library Advisory Board, said during Tuesday's study session. The library also was a busy place for events in 2023. More than 21,200 users attended children and teen programs in the facility, for example. Library officials now plan to close the Children and Teen Services section from May 6th to May 17th for renovations, new shelves, and additional seating. "I think a vibrant library is an essential service to the city, Councilmember Diane Crist said during this study session. The report findings come after Longmont voters soundly rejected ballot issue 3C during the November 2023 election, which would have increased taxes to pay for a new $25.7 million branch library, as well as the operation and maintenance costs of the new facility and the existing library at 409 4th Avenue. The library was built in 1993 and is roughly 51,000 square feet. It was sized to accommodate a population of up to 68,000 residents and likely didn't consider the need for personal computers, Wi-Fi, and the emergence of the library as serving a significant population of unhoused people, according to the Longmont Public Library Feasibility Study Phase 2, which was completed by Seeger Consulting SPC and finalized in November of 2022. About 100,000 people live in Longmont. In other news, the City Council met in executive session prior to Tuesday's study session to talk about, quote, the potential acquisition of real property interests for city parks and natural resources, transportation, and water projects, end quote, according to the agenda. Executive sessions are closed to the public and city officials may take no formal action while having one. No other details were immediately available about the executive session at press time. Our next front page article is entitled DA 57 Cases Affected by Accusations Against a CBI Scientist. The 8th Judicial District Attorney's Office has identified 57 Larimer County cases with irregularities tied to the work of Yvonne Missy Woods, the Colorado Bureau of Investigation scientist accused of altering, deleting, and omitting data in her lab work. A spokesperson for the DA's office said in an email that the office had sent credibility disclosure notification letters to 47 defendants or defense attorneys in cases where those involved were convicted, with the remaining 10 case defendants having their case dismissed, having been found not guilty or having died. The email stated that CBI's investigation into Woods is ongoing and added that as the office receives correspondence on affected cases, it will evaluate each case internally and work with CBI to determine what, if any, actual impact there is to these cases. The district attorney's office will communicate with victims on potentially impacted cases if it is likely there will be additional proceedings based on the DA's review, the DA spokesperson wrote in the email. It should be noted that the existence of an anomaly slash irregularity does not mean that the conviction is unreliable or that the case will necessarily be reopened. We will continue to be as transparent as possible throughout this process and will continue to share information with defendants, defense attorneys, and victims, while adhering to relevant court orders. The district attorney's office did not release any specific information on these 57 cases or if it had heard back from attorneys on what could be reopened cases. At this point, it is difficult to determine the potential impact on any cases, quote, until we are able to fully understand the conclusions of the CBI report, CBI review, and then evaluate those conclusions against the additional existing evidence in each case, according to the email. If it is determined by a court or the parties agree that the validity of a conviction is in question, it could mean the case is reopened and relitigated in court, the office spokesperson wrote. The email also said prosecutors could not speculate as to whether and what type of legal challenges may be brought by these cases. We understand the desire for information regarding the potential impact on the convictions in cases in which Ms. Woods participated, according to the email from the DA spokesperson. The district attorney's office takes very seriously any issues involving the integrity of evidence and credibility of witnesses. But we must first receive the necessary information from CBI and then thoroughly review the evidence in each question case to evaluate what will likely be varying degrees of impact. We will continue to review the impacted cases and share what we can to ensure that those affected have the information they need. Times Call parent sues OpenAI and Microsoft. Eight newspapers, including four owned by Times Call parent company Media News Group, sued Microsoft and OpenAI on Tuesday, claiming the technology giants illegally harvested millions of copyrighted articles to create their cutting-edge generative artificial intelligence products, including OpenAI's ChatGPT and Microsoft's Copilot. While the newspaper's publishers have spent billions of dollars to send real people to real places to report on real events in the real world, the two tech firms are purloining the paper's reporting without compensation to create products that provide news and information plagiarized and stolen, according to a lawsuit in federal court. We can't allow OpenAI and Microsoft to expand the big tech playbook of stealing our work to build their own businesses at our expense, said Frank Pine, executive editor of Media News Group and Tribune Publishing, which owns seven of the newspapers. The misappropriation of news content by OpenAI and Microsoft undermines the business model for news. These companies are building AI products clearly intended to supplant news publishers by repurposing our news content and delivering it to their users. The lawsuit was filed Tuesday morning in the Southern District of New York on behalf of the Media News Group owned Mercury News, Denver Post, Orange County Register, and the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Also Tribune Publishing's Chicago Tribune, Orlando Sentinel, and South Florida Sun Sentinel, and the New York Daily News. Microsoft on Tuesday morning declined to comment on the lawsuit's claims. OpenAI said Tuesday morning it takes great care in its products and design process to support news companies. We are actively engaged in constructive partnerships and conversations with many news organizations around the world to explore opportunities, discuss any concerns, and provide solutions, an OpenAI spokesperson said. We see immense potential for AI tools like ChatGPT to deepen publishers' relationships with readers and enhance the news experience. Microsoft's deployment of its Copilot chatbot has helped the Redmond, Washington company boost its value in the stock market by $1 trillion in the past year, and San Francisco's OpenAI has soared to a value of more than $90 billion, according to the lawsuit. The newspaper industry, meanwhile, have struggled to build a sustainable business model in the internet era. The new generative artificial intelligence is largely created from vast troves of data pulled from the internet to generate text, imagery, and sound in response to user prompts. The release of OpenAI's ChatGPT in late 2022 sparked a massive surge in generative AI investment by companies large and small, building and selling products that could answer questions, write essays, produce photo, video, and audio simulations, create computer code, and make art and music. A flurry of lawsuits followed by artists, musicians, art authors, computer coders, and news organizations who claim use of copyrighted materials for training generative AI violates federal copyright law. Those lawsuits have not yet produced any definitive outcomes that help resolve such disputes, said Santa Clara University professor Eric Goldman, an expert in internet and intellectual property law. The lawsuit claims Microsoft and OpenAI are undermining news organizations' business models by retransmitting their content, putting at risk their ability to provide reporting critical for the neighborhoods and communities that form the very foundation of our great nation, end quote. Among the issues raised in the lawsuit is an incident in which ChatGPT responded to a prompt about smoking and asthma. In its response, the AI chatbot incorrectly said the Denver Post had published research saying smoking could be a cure for asthma. These hallucinations mislead users as to the source of the information they are obtaining, leading them to incorrectly believe that the information provided has been vetted and published by the publishers, the suit says. Microsoft and OpenAI, responding in February to a similar lawsuit filed by the New York Times in Denver, called the claim that generative AI threatens journalism is pure fiction. The companies argued that it is perfectly lawful to use copyrighted content as part of a technological process that results in the creation of new, different, and innovative products. Pine said Microsoft and OpenAI are stealing content from news publishers to build their products. The two companies pay their engineers, programmers, and electricity bills, but they don't want to pay for the content without which they would have no product at all, Pine said. That's not fair use, and it's not fair. It needs to stop. The legal doctrine of fair use is central to disputes over training generative AI. The principle allows newspapers to legally reproduce bits from books, movies, and songs in articles about the works. Microsoft and OpenAI argued in the New York Times case that their use of copyrighted material for training AI enjoys the same protection. Key points in evaluating whether fair use applies include how much copyrighted material is used and how much it is transformed, whether the use is for commercial purposes, and the effect on the use on the market for the copyrighted work. Use of fact-based content like journalism is more likely to qualify as fair use than the use of created materials like fiction, Goldman said. Outputs from Microsoft and OpenAI products, the newspaper's lawsuit claimed, reproduced portions of the newspaper's articles verbatim, Examples included in the lawsuit purported to show multiple sentences and entire paragraphs taken from newspaper articles and produced in response to prompts. Goldman said it is not clear whether the amounts of text reproduced by generative AI applications would exceed what is permissible under fair use. Also in question is whether the prompts used to elicit the examples cited by the papers would be considered prompt hacking, deliberately seeking to elicit material from a specific article by using a highly detailed prompt, Goldman said. Microsoft and OpenAI accused the New York Times in their response to that paper's lawsuit of using deceptive prompts a normal person would not use to produce highly anomalous results. The papers are seeking unspecified damages, restitution of profits, and a court order forcing Microsoft and OpenAI to stop the alleged copyright infringement. From the In Brief column, we've got a short article out of Longmont. It says, Parent Resource Fair is set for Skyline High School. St. Vrain Valley School's Special Education Department is hosting a Parent Resource Fair to give families of students with disabilities an opportunity to connect with community agencies that can help them. The fair will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at Skyline High School at 600 East Mountain View Avenue in Longmont. The groups participating include Ames Disability Services, ARC of Weld County, Blue Sky Bridge, Boulder County Workforce, Center for People with Disabilities, the Colorado Initiative for Higher Education, Elevated Supports, Envision, Envoy Foster Care and Envoy Associates, Front Range Community College Disability Services, Gather and Grow Therapy Services, Hands and Voices, Imagine, Integrated Life Choices, Mental Health Partners, Mobility for All, Parents Step Up, Peak Parent Center, Pomeria Pathways, Project Spectrum, SketchUp, Rocky Mountain Down Syndrome Association, Robert Howell Medicare Broker, SCOPE, Special Olympics, St. Vrain Valley SWAP, St. Vrain Valley Assistive Technology and Vocational Rehabilitation and Wonder Years. Nonprofit unveils a horse evacuation helper app. The Longmont nonprofit Colorado Horse Rescue debuted a new emergency horse transportation app to help people evacuate their horses in case of natural disasters such as wildfires. The app connects volunteer drivers with people who need emergency evacuation help for their horses. The app is free for Colorado residents with funding from the Zarpet Family Foundation. Find out more about the app at horsealert.org. And lastly, we've got out of hygiene, Hawk Air open house set for Thursday. An open house for Hawk Air, the school's annual capstone project, is from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Thursday at Hygiene Elementary School at 11968 North 75th Street in Longmont. Community members are invited to join the school on this year's journey to Ecuador to immerse themselves in architecture, art, food and music of the country. The school initiative integrates STEAM education with a design challenge centered on the year's chosen destination. Thank you for joining us for the Wednesday Boulder Daily and the Longmont Times Call, read by Kevin Martindale.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.